Hello everyone, I'm Tony, this is Ange, and here's Daz, and we're the admins for Back to the Future, the musical fans. Our Facebook group now has over 3,000 members. We also post to bttfmusical.fans on Instagram, bttfmusicalfans on Twitter, and you can find all our past interviews on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Music, and most other popular podcasting platforms. And it's been a little while since we did one of these, but today we're absolutely thrilled to be joined by the leading lady from the best new musical in the West End.
It's Rosie Hyland,
who plays Lorraine Baines in Back to the Future, the musical.
I love that Goldie from Air cushion, by the way. Is that a cushion?
Yeah, I turned the tote bag into a cushion.
That's so clever. I love that. It's really great.
Daz has all his swag and props and memorabilia behind him.
Yeah, I love it.
Letting the side down a bit. Yeah, it's great to finally chat with you, Rosie. Obviously, we've had tons of stuff that we could chat about, but this time we've also asked some of the members of our Facebook group what they wanted to know, so we'll ask you some of their questions as well. So, Ange, if you want to kick us off with our first one.
Yeah, Rosie, we know that you've worked on, again, had quite the theatre career up to Back to the Future. You've worked on Carousel, Sister Act, Shrek, School of Rock. I wanted to take it back to the beginning and how you got started in your training, if you wouldn't mind sharing.
Yeah, so I trained in Singapore. I got a degree in musical theatre at LaSalle College of the Arts, which is a little off the beaten path, but it came about because I'd grown up in Southeast Asia. And I'm from Australia, had grown up in like Hong Kong, Taiwan, and a few places, and had to go to college in Australia because financially and visas and all that kind of thing. And I was really struggling to get into performing arts schools in Australia that were good, the sort of NIDA and the WAPA and all that kind of thing. I tried out for like 2 years and just didn't get in anywhere. And in the meantime, had been doing a fallback course, a double degree in dance and education. And it wasn't really my thing. And then eventually I heard about this school in Singapore that was like poaching a lot of teachers from Australia, like good teachers. And I thought that could be good. It's closer to home. It's closer to where my parents were living at the time. Singapore is closer to where I grew up. Sounded really good. And it was a brand new course. So they were kind of like catering it to the people who were in the course. And so I tried out, I got in, and I moved to Singapore. And so that's where I got my degree. And it was great fun, 3 years in Singapore. And then after that, we had like one London agent come to our showcase, because obviously Singapore is a way to go for a showcase. And I was really lucky. He was like, all right, well, if you come to London, I'll represent you. And I'd already gotten myself a youth mobility visa or whatever it is. I was like, well, I'm already coming. That's great. And so he started lining up auditions for me. And I was just in the right place at the right time. Carousel was the first thing. It was my very first audition. And I came to London a little early to audition for it. And I did one round. It was kind of bonkers. It was mental, actually. And I did one round and they kind of were like, it was David Grindrod casting it. And they were like, do you have a visa to work here? You can work here. I'm like, yeah. And they're like, okay. And then I got a call later saying I'd booked it. So yeah, it was just very stars got in alignment for me there. Carousel was great. That was fun. Fun job.
Brilliant. Thanks for that, Rosie. Well, as Tony said, we have asked quite a few questions to the group to see if there's anything that they want to know. We've got a question from Lou Jammers. She would like to know, what was the first show you ever saw that made you fall in love with theatre?
This is a bit of a cliche, but Phantom. It was Phantom. I was 10. I was living in Hong Kong. We didn't get a lot of we got the big tours that came through. But I wasn't exactly like steeped in musical theater. And so when that came through, I remember like sitting in kind of like the stalls, like in the middle of the stalls, and that chandelier came out and then a beautiful woman came on and sang very high. And I was like totally taken by it. And I used to I got the soundtrack and like used to direct all my friends in it. And I would play Christine and the Phantom. I was obsessed with being the Phantom. And yeah, I was obsessed with Phantom of the Opera for a while there, and that's what made me go, I need to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, you know, it was a combination of very emotional music and some like theater magic, like some of that stage magic that at the time was like really groundbreaking. And yeah, I was really sucked in, just sucked in by it. Yeah.
Good choice. That was my favorite before Back to the Future. So
yeah.
Yeah, so tell us a bit about your journey to Hill Valley. Like, we're interested to know, how did you end up landing the part of Lorraine? Obviously, you've been involved from a long, long time ago. What was the process for you? How did you end up in Hill Valley?
So back in like 2014, I did a job with Jamie Lloyd. I did Year in Town with Jamie Lloyd. And that's when he was on the project for Back to the Future. And so I auditioned for him. And booked it, and then things didn't work out with Jamie.
Yeah.
And the whole project, it like the whole thing got kind of shelved. And I assumed then that whatever happened with Back to the Future after that, they'll get a new director. That new director won't be interested in me. They'll want their own people, or they'll want someone new, and that'll be that. And so I let go of Back to the Future completely. I was gutted at the time. I was like, oh no. But it came back around in 2018, and I heard it had come back around. I was like, oh, it's back. They'll never see me for it. I've aged out. No. They won't be. I didn't even like bother asking my agent if it was something I could go in for. I just wrote it off as such a lost cause. And then I got an email to send in another tape for it. Because I think what had happened was they'd been looking for Lorraine's, and then Colin had dug out my old tape and from like my Jamie Lloyd audition and had gone, let's just get her to retape. And he sent that to John and John Rando, and he liked it. So it was just a tape I did. I was in School of Rock at the time, and I just recorded it in my dressing room like quite quickly too. And yeah, so I booked it twice.
Amazing.
Wild. Yeah. Wild.
Were you like already a fan of Back to the Future? Had you already watched the movies, or did that sort of come a bit later? How familiar were you?
Oh yeah, raised on it. Totally raised on it. I mean, the first film, I don't want to give away my age too much, but the film might have been made in the year I was born. And then subsequent films, but I was raised on them as if they were, I mean, they were just like, they've always been my favorite films, you know. A bit of a sucker for the second one. Yeah. I sort of love the second one. I was totally mesmerized by like their vision of the future. I was absolutely convinced that we were going to be flying around in cars and hoverboards and all that kind of stuff. I just thought it was brilliant. Yeah. Oh, yeah, love the films.
We've talked about your previous theatre experience. How did that come into play when you were starting to workshop and develop the role of Lorraine?
Yeah, it's interesting because it was on Year in Town. I kind of created a character from scratch. Year in Town had been done before, but never in the UK, and certainly not that version of Year in Town. And so that was some experience with creating something from scratch. And with this, it really felt like my first time really doing something from the ground up. But I was able to draw on my skills of. Because prior to that, I'd mainly played roles that had already been done, and I was just stepping into someone else's shoes. But at least with Lorraine, there was a template. You know, there's what Leah Thompson did with it. You have to pay homage to that. So in some ways, those skills overlapped, I think, in terms of like interpreting what someone else has done with it and trying to make that your own. I think I had some knowledge and skill there, but I for the most part was like looking around me at Hugh and Roger and Ollie and everyone else and just going, right, what are they doing? Yeah, okay. I'm just trying to ride off their coattails, basically. Yeah.
Was anything cut from them early workshops and early like shows that you were sort of prepping that you wish had been kept in? Was there anything you can recall?
We kept a lot. I'm gonna forget. The opening number had some little gems in there that for some of the like Clock Tower Woman and stuff like that, there were some cute little like sung moments for those characters that it was right to cut them, but that once upon a time were quite cute and funny and added something to them, you know. But
yeah,
not really. Most of it was like developed and fleshed out, if anything. I don't think we really lost anything. We did lose George whipping his glasses off at the sight of the DeLorean at the end of the show. It used to be one of my favorite sort of almost unseen moments in the show, but that's gone now. Yeah.
Florence Day from our group says that she'd love to play Lorraine at some point in the future, and she actually does a brilliant Lorraine cosplay. You'll have seen her at Stage Door in like the full dress, and she has all the hair. And
Yes, I think I know, yes.
So what advice would you give to someone who would like to play this iconic character one day?
Have you got 2 hours? gosh, I think playing the truth of her circumstances is the most important thing, and getting away from the kind of like, she's a good girl, she's a bad girl, she's a girl of the 50s, like that, all of those kind of stereotypes that I think it's quite tempting, but is a trap to get into, because she's a real person. She's not a stereotype. At baseline, Lorraine is, she is kind of like a typical rebellious teenager. She smokes, she drinks, she parks in cars with boys. She doesn't really value her studies. Her social life is the most important thing to her. But then enter Calvin Klein, and suddenly all of the like natural confidence and gumption that she has goes into superdrive, and she's like, she's a woman possessed, you know? And so she's suddenly like willing to do some very subversive things to get what she wants. She'll like chase a guy across town at night to Doc Brown's house, you know, a known crazy man, and ask him on a date. Like, that's totally bonkers that's really outside the box for a girl in the 50s. So, you know, you have to have a strong enough motivation, I hate that word, but like objective that you're really fighting for and that you're totally convinced by, and you just have to like laser focus on that and just play it for absolute serious truth, because comedy arises out of it naturally. But if you play it for comedy, if you ask for the laugh, or if you kind of ham it up too much, it's not funny anymore. It's the audience's job to laugh, not you. You know, you have to be just so serious about getting Calvin Klein, and it has to be life or death. The stakes have to be so high, and you got to put a lot of heat on him, you know, because the more heat you put on him, the more he will squirm. And I would just say go out to bat for your character, and be as clear, as crystal clear as you can about what it is you're fighting for and why.
Great. That's good. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you ever audition for the part, Florence, there you go.
Yeah, and like just ignore it. Just like don't think about what people are thinking of your performance. Just, it doesn't matter if they're laughing, it doesn't matter. It's because it's an iconic character, you can put a lot of pressure on yourself, but you almost kind of have to just disregard that and just get obsessed with your character and just fight for her. Yeah.
Brilliant. Like you said, it is an iconic character, and we've seen a few interactions between yourself and her. But has Leah Thompson ever been in touch with you at all to talk privately or anything like that?
Maybe a little bit. Yeah, I'm always like, Leah Thompson, message me. Freak out. Yeah, she's been very sweet to me. Yeah, yeah.
Not really. Did she give you any advice or anything like that?
No, I'm like too shy to ask. but she's like expressed interest in seeing the show kind of generally, and she's been very sweet and supportive, and yeah, just sent me like well wishes, and yeah, she's been really lovely to
have
in my DMs occasionally. Yeah,
I remember on the Reunited Apart, she seemed really excited for it when you guys all did the thing at the end, so.
Yeah. Just, everyone says she's just the most glorious human being, and I totally get that. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm hoping one day I get to meet her. Maybe, yeah.
Rosie, we in our Hugh interview, he said he really identified with the character of George just because he understood what it's like to be a bit geeky, struggle to talk to girls, etc. Are you similar? Is there any aspects of Lorraine's character that you sort of can identify with, either 1955 or either the 1985 Lorraines?
No. Well, maybe 1985 version 2, I identify with her. I identify with the older Lorraines more than the young Lorraine. When I was a teenager, I was awkward. I was very self-conscious. I had no confidence, certainly no confidence with boys. I was a bit of a lad. Like my way of getting male attention was to be like a tomboy. I was a very like late bloomer when it came to like dating and stuff like that. So I just, all of that like confidence that Lorraine has, and I had none of that. It's kind of like really cathartic or like fun for me to play that because I just never had that as a teenager. But I kind of understand like the older Lorraine's a little more intuitively. I think I've lived just enough life now. I'm not 47, but I've lived enough life to know what it's like to kind of go, I just need a vodka. I just need vodka. Vodka is my friend. Vodka never lets me down, you know. But then I've also like come through that and like feel as though I know what it's like to be a self-possessed, on the way to success, you know. I kind of, you know, in a healthy relationship and like all the nice things about Lorraine's better, the happy ending for Lorraine that I feel is more me.
Yeah. Which one's most fun? Which you have the most fun with?
I kind of love Lorraine, like the very last version of Lorraine. That's just, she's like hyperbolically successful, you know, and like her hair is so successful, like everything about her is just like, I expect success to follow me everywhere. I love that about her, but that's really fun. But I love teenage Lorraine. I just love her. She's so much fun. She's so much fun.
Yeah. We love those scenes, Pretty Baby and all of that. It's so funny. Like, we love those.
It's so funny because I had no idea what reaction that number was gonna get. I, in a rehearsal room, I was like, is this okay? Like, is it good cringe? I don't know. And I was too close to the project, but there are some nights where the audience, I don't know if you've ever been there on a night where the audience are like, oh no, no, no. And it's just, it's wild. And I love it. It's like, I really get off on the cringiness.
We've mentioned Hugh already once, and it's clear that you are like really, really close and really good friends. Good times. Has he ever tried to make you laugh on stage? Has he ever been successful?
No.
Really? No.
He's much too serious. We're both a bit too serious about, oh look, there's a few, like if we're both turned up stage and you know, the mics are off maybe, but never as George has he ever done anything to derail a scene or anything like that. He just would never.
Yeah. You see, I can sort of see it between like Roger and Ollie trying to make each other laugh. I don't know whether they are.
Yeah. I think they kind of get away with having that dynamic, but with George, because of who Roger is, he kind of has the scope for a little bit of that. But yeah, with George and Lorraine, it's deadly serious. It's deadly serious.
Are there any other funny stories or anything that's gone wrong that you could share with us?
Oh, there was one day. It actually wasn't that long ago. It was only three, four weeks ago. We came on for the car scene. The car scene. There's like 400 car scenes. the parking lot scene with Marty and Lorraine, where she tries to kiss him. There was no music. But usually there's like underscoring. There's a little bit of like Pretty Baby underscoring there. And like the car's coming on, and like I was like, the lights aren't coming up and there's no music. Why are we going on? But there's not, are we gonna stop? Is the show gonna stop? And we're both like kind of looking into the wings to see if someone's saying stop. You know, like usually you get a very clear signal if the show's stopping. And I'm thinking, are we gonna have to like eggily get out of the car and like walk off the stage? Like what's gonna happen? And there's no music. The lights eventually kind of come up. And I'm like, I'm looking down at the pit to see like, why is there no music playing? And I can see our MD is like down the cans, like saying something very loud, but I can't make it out. And so we're just kind of like, oh yeah, that's a great idea. I'd like to park. like, are we doing this? Okay. And I'm thinking if we get through the scene and there's no music, I have to sing. And I'm not like fun, I'm singing this a cappella. Like, no, this is not the X Factor. We get to the part where I have to sing and I'm just like, I just cut the number because like no music came in. And I was like, I'm cutting it. I just made an executive decision in front of 1500 people. I'm not doing it. And I went straight. I mean, luckily the scene is almost verbatim the way it is in the film. And so I was able to just kind of go straight from, oh, you know what I do in those situations? I don't worry about it. And I just kissed him. But I don't think Ollie, like, I think Ollie had kind of been thinking she's just going to have to sing it a cappella. And I really took him by surprise. And the look on his face, like, he always looks surprised because that's his character. But he was looking at me like, what just happened? It's just lucky that Biff made it on stage, that Aiden made it on stage, because he's got kind of a quickish change there. And he just, like, he had to peg it. Yeah, I was like, I never need that to happen to me ever again. And it turns out that the sheet music for that scene had fallen out and had like fallen underneath, and like RMD was like, I had nothing and I couldn't just wing it. And yeah.
Well handled.
Thanks.
Hugh, when we chat to Hugh, again, we're talking about him. He's always quick to say how much you've taught him about musical theatre, how much you've supported him and, you know, helped.
That's help rubbish. Him That's such film. Rubbish.
You think so?
I don't know what so. I've taught him.
Well, he's a newcomer to the stage. What has he taught you?
He's taught me how to act. I think I kind of had a sense of how to act, but he's taught me a lot about having passion and obsession for your character, which is something that I remember learning like in my college days and that I've always had in the back of my mind, but you know, anytime I play a character, but this idea of fantasizing about your character, being obsessed with your character and their world and everything that's in it, and it being cool to care that much. It has been an amazing, he's just an incredible example of that, and of having a level of commitment and integrity with your work that is just, it's, he's in a league of his own. And so that's one of my big takeaways with him is just the sheer level of commitment there. He's just a testament to, I mean, he's obviously naturally very talented. Like he's got natural talent that always goes in his favor, but then you add to that incredible skill and incredible commitment and you get magic. And this very mysterious performance that is full of detail. That's my, like, I'm like, ooh, if I can ever accomplish something like that in my career, I'll be happy. Nice. Yeah. He's incredible.
Great to hear. So going back to the fan questions, Timothy Scholl from our group was wondering whether you have any pre-show or interval superstitions or rituals?
No superstitions. I do have some rituals, I suppose. You know, I always kind of do things in the same order and in the same way. I'm a little kind of like Rafa Nadal-ish in the sort of like that kind of thing, you know, before you go do your serve, it's like, I've always got to touch my ear and do the thing. But not in a superstitious way, but just in a like, I know that this is what's going to work for me to do my best version of the show. So I definitely have to pee at these key points in the show. that's important to me that I do that. And, you know, I always like run a couple of lines at exactly the same point, and I like a couple of singing notes that I'm like, I don't want the first time I sing that note to be on stage in front of people. So I'll always practice it before I go on. And sometimes I do a stupid dance for Hugh before the show. It's not, but that's not, I mean, that's a ritual, but not religious about it. But yeah, I'm trying to think of anything that's particularly profound, but there really isn't. There really isn't. I just have like a routine of like warming up and putting my face on and that kind of thing. But I always kind of do it in the same way. Yeah.
A question that a lot of people want to know, it's a really common one to ask our guests. What's your favorite scene to perform and why?
Oh gosh, it varies. It varies depending on my mood that day. Sometimes it's Pretty Baby. Sometimes I'm like, I can't wait for people to squirm. I can't wait for it. And then sometimes something about that boy, it's usually something about that boy, because sometimes Pretty Baby feels like a very big burden to carry, actually. And sometimes it feels like an Everest that I have to climb. And then once I'm done with that, then I can kind of enjoy something about that boy a bit more. And I there are moments in that scene that are just pure, unadulterated joy that I'm allowed to, as a character, just have fun. She's just having the most, she's just in love and head over heels, and it's just such a fun emotion to go into. And infatuation, you know, and it's a total escape. You have to be so focused in that scene to survive it. There's so much going on there. Yeah. And that you can't, there's no room in your head to think about anything else, no matter how many times we've done it. The focus it takes to get through that is, it's huge. It's huge. And I enjoy getting lost in it. But it just varies so much. Sometimes it's Hello. Sometimes it's the car scene. You know, I just love that little scene. Oh, you know what? I love the scene I always, always, always love is Marty, that was very interesting music, and you know, good luck to you both in that whole little section with those three characters. Yeah, that's always like a nice moment for me.
That's a beautiful moment.
Yeah.
My favorite is probably I love the freeze frame in that, something about that boy. Love it, just everything about it.
Yeah. I've never seen it. I don't know anything about it.
It's perfect the way you like the way you lift Ollie's arm down as it's up like that, and then just like just when Aiden just goes get him, and then everything just goes into it. It's amazing.
Chaos. Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny because as Lorraine, oh, here's a tip: if you want to play Lorraine, you just have to only ever focus on Calvin Klein. Like, there's just nothing else exists. You're just in a Calvin Klein tunnel. But I'm so like focused on him. If I'm not looking at him, I'm visualizing him. So I've never seen anything else in that number. I once glanced over at Hugh, because he's standing, when I'm looking at Calvin, he's like kind of like right behind him in my eye line. And I once looked at him and his face was
it's amazing. Yeah.
Now I'm like, oh, that's why they're laughing. It's that. And that's when I was like, oh, I really can never, ever look at what's happening, because I'll just go. Otherwise, I'll go. I'm going to be able to keep it together. Yeah.
Right. So this is a question that we are asked a lot, because obviously we're all pretty much from Manchester. How do you think the Manchester run went, and how was it on like the opening night for you? Did you expect such a great reaction from the Back to the Future community? And what was your like reaction after seeing Stage Door afterwards and things like that?
I just got a little tingle thinking about it, because it was such a, I really look back on Manchester as, I think, possibly the best part of this whole journey, because we worked already, even just by that point, had worked on it for so long. And I, we had some inkling that the fans were on board, because we'd had, you know, with the workshops had been pretty inclusive in that sense. But, you know, it's a very different thing inviting like a handful of people to a workshop and then opening it up to a whole audience full of full of Back to the Future fans. The response was just so far beyond anything we could ever have imagined. It was just out of this world. It was mental. And we kind of hoped people would like it. We just didn't expect it to be. I mean, that reaction, the reaction was just, it was like, I can't describe it. You know, I still can't describe it. It was, I almost came out of myself at a couple of points. Like I just almost was just like completely derailed and unwound by the whole thing. I remember when being on the ground after fighting Biff in the parking lot and watching Hugh do that punch. And the sound that the audience made was so huge. And like, at risk of sounding wanky, I've played Drury Lane, I've played the Palladium. You know, I've heard some big audiences and some big reactions in my life, and nothing will ever compare to the sound of that. It was just, I was on the floor and I went like that. I'm like looking at George like that. It was overwhelming and just the most exhilarating thing to be part of. We all sat there afterwards with like pizza and beer and just sat in the stalls and like looked back at the stage and like, did that really just happen? It was absolutely mental. Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah.
Something that the fans were waiting for a long time, right, from Manchester was the cast recording. Like people constantly asking in our group, when will the cast recording be out? When is it going to happen? Obviously, there was a couple of delays. And it was finally released this year. And we noticed one of your Instagram stories said they recorded the sound coming out of my face and put it on a record, Lifebox Ticks. Which is a brilliant way of putting how beautiful your voice is. But was this your first time recording a studio album? Like, what was that experience like?
Yeah, it was. I mean, I had to be in the business for like 13 years before I finally got to do a cast recording. It was so cool because like Alan and Glenn were there and like Nick and everyone and all our music men were there. And it was just in this really cool studio. And it was weird to kind of be in isolation, and I felt a little bit of pressure, but they were so, so good with me and very encouraging. They set up the environment to be very like relaxed. Mm. I'm sure that they anticipated us all being a little nervous. But then there's also part of you that's like, well, they're not gonna let it sound bad. Like they can just mix it, right? I'm sort of thinking like, it was really that bad. Maybe they can just mix it. tried to take the pressure off myself a little bit. Yeah, it was exciting. It was a really, really fun thing to do. And I remember being asked to come back and do a few spoken bits, just that they could drop in some bits of dialogue. And it was just an extra half an hour that I had to come back and do on another day. And it wasn't part of the schedule. They just were like, could you do it? And so I came back in, and to say thanks, Nick, our MD, he kind of played me what they had of something about that boy. He's like, something about that boy is kind of finished. Do you want to hear it? Don't tell anyone. And I sat there in the studio and listened to it and just cried. I was like, I never heard myself sound that good. and I didn't know that that's what it could sound like, you know, because you kind of heard it at the Sitz Probe, you know, you heard the music, but then I've never heard it that way ever again. Like the music, what you hear on stage is not, the balance is different, and you don't hear everyone else's vocals in the same way. And I was like, oh, this is what it can sound like. this is what it's meant to sound like. That's wild. And yeah, I cried.
We know you did, like the cast, we saw the cast did like a listening party before it was properly released. But do you, like, you've heard it, but do you listen to it? Do you like cringe listening to yourself a bit? Or do you actually enjoy like sitting back and taking that in? And have you listened to it again since? Or do you have enough of it being on stage every night doing it?
I did the thing where you're like, I listened to it a couple of times and was like, yeah, I'm proud. I feel proud of this. And, but I haven't really listened to it. Since I couldn't do that. I couldn't do it. Cause then I'd start going, oh, but it doesn't sound like that on a night, you know, I'd start beating myself up. So I'm like proud of it. Maybe I'll come back to when I've left the job. Maybe I'll come back and listen to it again. But yeah.
You should be very proud of it. You do have a stunning voice, which is something all of our members always share. Did you ever consider being a recording artist rather than going into theatre industry?
No, gosh, no. Singing is something I've had to work really, really, really hard at just to be competent. I actually thought I would go into opera for a while. early, before I went and studied musical theater, my voice wants to sing classically. That's just how my voice wants to sing, but that's not where my career took me. And so I've had to learn to sing contemporary. Like I've had to kind of learn how to belt. That's a very like learned skill that I've cultivated. It doesn't come naturally to me. I spent years having to like unlearn stuff and relearn and learn how to do it sustainably. And it's a tough skill for me. It's actually really, I'm really tied up in knots about singing sometimes. No, I never considered being a recording artist ever. It's like, it was never my first skill. Yeah.
Oh, okay. And would you ever consider laying down your vocals on a duet with Hugh on one of his little funny videos?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, sure. I feel like he's kind of a one-man show in that regard, but yeah, sure. I could do a rap.
You need to see that.
That we want to see. We've got a few quick fire questions, just with like, you know, short answers, whatever comes to your head first. We'll see how we get through these.
Okay.
You ready?
Yeah. Okay, what's your favorite line from the whole show?
Calvin!
What's your favorite song to perform?
Something About That Boy.
Apart from Lorraine, who's your favorite character in the show?
I love a clock tower woman.
Yeah.
I love a clock tower woman. Yeah.
Favorite costume?
Oh, the gingham, purple gingham. Yeah, purple gingham.
Apart from your own, which song from a show would you most like to sing?
Put your mind to it. Yeah, I need to be in that number.
What's your favorite detail in the show that most people probably don't notice?
Oh man, oh gosh, there's so many. Detail from the show that no one notices. You should see inside George's notebooks.
Oh,
yeah. Oh yeah. It's a whole other. It's Act Three.
Which cast members are most at your real life Betty and Babs?
I mean, my real life Betty and Babs, Hugh and Hugh, probably.
Okay.
Who's an absolute dream to work with?
Who's a dream to work with? Oh gosh, everyone, but Ryan, he's an absolute dream. They all are. But Ryan's at the top.
Okay.
If for some unusual reason you had to play another character one night, which one would it be?
Oh, Clock Tower Woman. I'm obsessed. Also, I figure if I'm Clock Tower Woman, then that also means I get to be a DeLorean girl. I'm desperate to be a DeLorean girl. Just want to be in that number. Yeah.
Which cast member is the biggest slacker?
Oh, man. It's Aiden.
Aiden.
Yeah, you broke up there. Yeah. Aiden.
No, he's not a slacker.
He got most tardy on Hugh's interview as well. So he's gonna be like,
yeah, he's tardy. Yeah.
Can you actually speak French after all those lessons?
No.
And the last one. Have you ever not managed to down your glass of vodka at the end of Hello, Is Anybody Home?
Damn it, that's such a fear that I'm like not going to make it. I've always managed to do it.
Yeah. That's such an impressive thing. I think, like you say, under pressure, on stage, I'm assuming it's water rather than vodka.
Yeah, there was one day in rehearsals where it was vodka and... I poured a full glass of it and went in for the sip and stage management were like, no, it's vodka. Yeah.
Those are great answers. Thank you for that.
I have this feeling that one day I'm going to get a prank pulled on me. I have a feeling.
Okay, Rosie, yesterday was, of course, the show's 300th performance at the Adelphi Theatre. Amazing that milestone. And the show has quite rightly received some amazing recognition through the awards. So we were wondering, the biggest one was, of course, as Tony mentioned, the Olivier for Best New Musical. What was that evening like? And then finding out that the show had won that one.
Yeah, it was, that was such an intense night, you know, because we were up for a few things. And as the night wore on, we kind of were like, all right, looks like we're getting shafted here. And I almost forgot about Best New Musical category. Like, we got to the end and I was like, cool, that's the end of the show. And then they got to Best New Musical and I was like, oh yeah, I forgot about that. And then thought, oh no, that's just no chance. Like, we've been forgotten. And then they called our name out and it was total disbelief. Everything, we all just kind of like jumped to our feet, like, what? And it was just such a surprise, huge, huge surprise. and I think it just took us all a bit of a minute to process it, you know? It was really exciting, really, really exciting.
We were all so excited on all these awards. We're on the chat. We've got like our fingers poised, ready to post to the socials, trying to get in there before the official accounts and everything. And we're just so excited. Like, all the fans in the group, as soon as we post something, they're all jumping on it with all the comments. Like, we have this real sense of pride that even just as the fans, we can be part of this success that you've all made. So thanks for that. It's brilliant.
Yeah. Well, you are. I mean, you guys have been on the journey, you know, from day dot, and you have been part of it. And it's for you, you know, and we need you. And you've been so good. You've been so good and so supportive. I don't think any of us could go out there with any confidence if we hadn't had your support, you know, and like your tick of approval. It means the world to us. So, you know, what's it for if you guys aren't into it?
Well, we definitely are.
Yeah, I think the answer, you spoke about this earlier, but Back to the Future is obviously the best musical. But other than Back to the Future, what's your favourite play or musical?
I love Hairspray. I love Hairspray. Into the Woods. Love that one. It's like Hair. I love Hair. there's too many. too many to cut. You know, Urinetown was like a real favorite for me, and I'm just lucky enough I got to be in it. That's always been one of my favorite shows, and I kind of couldn't believe I know I was in it, but it was also one of my favorite shows. Yeah, I don't know. There's a few. Yeah.
James Tradgett from our group had a question of, what is your dream musical role, other than The Rain, of course?
I don't know. I always kind of just figure like it's hasn't been written yet. I mean, there's a few I'd love to do an Amali Abolish and She Loves Me. I'd love to sing that way, you know, having an excuse to sing that way again. No one's paid me to sing that way since Carousel. And she's just a beautiful character. I'd love a baker. I think there's a baker's wife in me. Those are some roles that already exist, but my real dream is to create new now. Yeah. Like now that I've had a taste of creating new characters, I'm like, I want to create new characters. So I kind of feel like maybe she's not written yet, whatever the next dream role is. Yeah.
Are there any other movies you'd like to see adapted into a musical?
Gosh, that's a tough one. Could you make Wayne's World a musical? That's like my favorite. That's like one of my favorite films. I love Wayne's World. I don't know.
That would be amazing.
It would be like a rock concert, right? It'd be so much fun.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
I'm really into like creating roles for women and, you know, get lots of women in musical theater playing more roles. But like, I don't know, Wayne's World, I'm such a sucker for that film. And yeah, because like Big is one of my other favorite films, but that's already a musical. So yeah, Wayne's World.
We'd come see that.
Yeah, I'll come with you.
Would you ever be interested in getting into TV and movies, or are you quite happy sticking with musical theatre?
Yeah, would love to. I don't know, like I think because of like my accent and because of what's already on my CV, it's maybe a little hard here in the UK to kind of get seen that way. And I love musical theatre, so it's also hard for me to be motivated enough to kind of like really push for it. But I would love to. Yeah, I'd love to.
Cool.
We saw some of the artwork that you created. I know it was a bit of a lockdown project as well for you, intensified during lockdown, but you saw it create some artwork as gifts for the rest of the company for press. Mm-hmm. It was amazing. Is that something, a passion that's continued, and are you continuing with that?
Yeah, I've always loved drawing. And I mean, an iPad will make an artist out of anyone. You get Procreate on an iPad and suddenly you can do anything. I studied drawing when I was a kid, and my mom's an artist, and she's very talented. So doing things like making things for people is just like something I often do, you know, like I always would rather try and make something than just buy a thing. I love drawing. Yeah, and the digital drawing is just so like exciting, because it can be watercolor, it can be pencil, or whatever, you know, you've got all the mediums there. It's really fun. Yeah, I love that. Yeah.
What job would you be doing if you weren't musical theatre?
Like as a career or a side hustle? Yeah,
as a career.
As a career, I kind of would think that like art curatorship would be kind of fun, or archaeology, something related to art history.
Cool.
Yeah.
Great. Well,
I know what my job would be. I know. Ooh, I'd be one of those, you know, the people at the V&A who like restore old, like they get like a Q-tip and they like restore meticulously. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's the one.
Or like they're sewing something back together and like it has to go into the exact like minutia jobs like that. Yes. Yeah.
Got it.
That was fun. Yeah. Let's hope you never end up there doing that. Let's hope we continue to see you on stage. Let's hope we see you in more productions and maybe on TV and film. I think it would be a brilliant thing to see you in something on screen. So we've come to the end of our interview, but finally we have to ask you the question that we ask in all our interviews, even though now the show's been running for like 300 shows at the Adelphi. For anyone who still hasn't yet seen the show, can you just sum up why they should book a ticket and head to the Adelphi to watch Back to the Future, the musical?
Oh my gosh, it's such a fun show. If you've seen the films, it is just, I think it just delivers all of the, it's like seeing the, if you want to experience seeing Back to the Future for the first time again, come to the musical, because it's all of that and more. We've upped the ante. There's new dimensions to the whole thing, and it's so, so clever and funny, and we're all so passionate about it. Everyone on that stage is extremely passionate about it, and it's uplifting, it's adventure, and if you haven't seen the film, it's sci-fi, romance, comedy, adventure, family, you know, it's all of those things rolled into one, and it's a musical, and there's just no chance that you're gonna leave the show bored. I think it's a wild ride, so yeah.
It is, and obviously we advocate for everyone seeing it. Thank you for your time this morning. We know you're incredibly busy with the show. We really appreciate you taking the time out to speak to us, and we can't wait to share this with all the fans, and we can't wait to see you on stage again. We'll be back there soon.
Yeah, well, thanks so much for having me, guys. It was really, really great to talk to you.
Brilliant. Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Yes.
Bye.
Bye.